What are your habits you're forming daily? And are you willing to have consistency and discipline and willpower? The willpower meaning the days I don't want to show up to the cages. Am I willing to listen to that voice and say, I hear you, I'm going to do it anyway?
Welcome back to another episode of The Burn. I am Ben Newman, and you know how we do this every single week. We're going to bring you a story of a different athlete, celebrity, entertainer, somebody from the business world performing at the highest possible level, who has understood over time that there's this burn that lies inside of you, and it's that burn that many coaches don't talk about that actually ignites why and purpose that then causes you to be disciplined in your action on a daily basis. So I got to tell you, this is a first time in five seasons of The Burn that I think the B-roll we were recording before we even started is going to be better than the interview. So we may have to like have a special second episode for the conversation we had before Sean Casey and I even start with you. This is like two old friends. This is full transparency. This is the first time we've ever had the chance to meet. And it's like two buddies who are cutting it up, who've known each other for 20 years. And I know you all know Sean Casey as the mayor. He is one of the most likable Major League Baseball players of all time. 12 seasons, a three-time All-Star, appeared in a World Series. He's in the Cincinnati Reds Hall of Fame, which is a St. Louis-born kid. You know, we're supposed to hate the Reds, but I got a love for this guy. And we had some fun talking about the Reds and the Cardinals. But here's what's amazing. What I love about conversations I have with athletes, and it's not just the work with athletes, it's meeting new friends like this. It's amazing when an athlete with an amazing career takes the platform that they've been blessed with as an athlete and they use it to multiply bigger impact off the field than they ever had on it. And that's what you're going to find in this interview with Sean Casey. He's done that through his amazing charity called the Miracle League. We're actually going to put in the notes, you've got to see this, the video of the Miracle League in South Hills. The work he's doing for special needs adults and children is incredible. They've even taken the Miracle League, which provides them an opportunity to compete in order to play baseball, but they've now created a concession stand called the Next Inning, where they teach these individuals, adults and kids with special needs, to interview and to have their first paid job. Sean Casey, brother, you blow me away. Like I said, it's like two friends cutting up. So officially, I can go on and on and on with a bio, but nobody wants to hear from me anymore. Sean Casey, the mayor, welcome to The Burn.
Oh, Ben, thanks, man. I'm fired up to be on The Burn, man. Fan of yours and what you do and the impact you have on so many, brother. And appreciate the intro, man. Really do. Great to be on with you, Brent.
Well, it's great to be on with you. And I know that a lot of people, they're going to, you know, they're going to pay attention to like this prepared content more than they will the B-roll. But I'm telling you, we're going to do some side clips with that B-roll because it's amazing. But here's what I'd like to start with. We talked a little bit about the minor leagues and the players that you would see with talent. And you would say to yourself, this guy's got more talent than me. Why are you keeping me? You should be keeping him. But it was your work ethic. It was your passion. It was your willingness to stay extra and do the work, the number of extra swings if you're having trouble hitting a curveball. Can you take us there? Where did you find your edge? Where did your burn come from? Where did that work ethic come from for you?
Oh, man. Just so much to unpack there, man. You know, my burn came when I was 14 years old, you know, back with when I lived in, I'm still here in Upper St. Clair, but it was the first year I didn't play as a player. I was, you know, 14 years old, freshman baseball. It wasn't even the varsity team. It was just a freshman team, you know? And I remember, you know, I was one of the better players all the way up. And I remember my dad, you know, was just big on, you know, he was a hardworking guy. He was a chemical salesman. You know, he was a guy that just, he was a guy that lived his life with a lot of grit. He was a grinder. You know what I mean? Traveled 3 days a week. You know, he was just, I just admired him as you know, the work ethic that he had. And I remember one day coming home to him and when I wasn't playing as a freshman, I said, "Hey, Dad, man, I just need you to go talk to the coach really quick because he must not have seen me at 12-year-old travel all-star hitting home runs. He's not, this guy's not paying attention. I'm like, can you go talk to him real quick and just tell him how good I am, you know, that I should be out there playing and I'm better than this kid that's playing ahead of me. And he was like, it was one of those conversations where I think as a parent, you know, you hope that you are saying the right things to your kids, that you're not enabling them. I think sometimes as parents, when we enable our kids, we end up disabling them. We don't let them struggle. We don't let them grind. We don't let them figure it out. We don't give them the lessons of having to, do what you need to do. So my dad was like, hey, listen, he goes, I agree with you. You're better than the kid that's playing ahead of you. But I said, my dad said, your coach doesn't think so. You're obviously not glaringly better than that kid. Cause if you were, you'd be playing. And he said, but I think this is a time of your life, 14, 15 years old, where you got to start looking at yourself in the mirror and say, am I putting in the work? Am I accountable for who I am? Can I get a little bit better or a lot better, glaringly better than the kid that's ahead of me? And there was a batting cage that opened up in our town, in the town next to me. And he said, hey, listen, there's a batting cage that opened up in the town, over here in Bethel Park, PA. He's like, I'll make you a deal. He goes, if you start hitting every day and start working on your craft and gaining that skill to become glaringly better than the kid that's ahead of you, he goes, I'll pay for those tokens every time you go. He goes, but as soon as you stop going, the deal's off. And I knew that was a big deal from my dad because, like I said, I knew the value of a dollar. We didn't have a ton of money. You know what I mean? It was, you know, slim pickings at the time. My mom would always say, we're only in this town for the school system. You know, it's the only reason we live here, you know? And so anyway, that's the burn started with me. I was like, he's right. He's right. Like, I don't hit on my own. I don't do anything extra. I didn't even think about that. So I started to go down to this batting cage and hit every day. It was Grand Slam USA. I don't know if you remember those back in the days. It was like, you know, that's not there anymore, but it was Grand Slam USA, fired up. I go there, start hitting, and I started getting a lesson every Tuesday night from this guy, Frank Porco. He never even played college baseball. He was a labor negotiator out here in Pittsburgh for the unions, but he just loved hitting. And I didn't have anybody else. There was no other places to go. So I started hitting with this guy, Frank Porco. And Ben, I am so indebted and grateful to this guy for his passion and his love for hitting and kids. I showed up every Tuesday night, 5:30, 6 o'clock, give him $20. Nowadays, it's probably $120. But I would just go there and we would start hitting. And he would pound into my head, great hitters wait, great hitters wait, great hitters wait. So at 14, 15 years old, I was like, this is the only knowledge I've ever gotten about hitting. So I started, okay, great hitters wait. So I started to learn to really drive the ball left center, left center, left center, wait, use my hands, develop great hands. But I started to develop the passion for the hitting, you know, that passion for like, man, this is incredible. This guy tells me to keep my front shoulder in, and the more I work on it, it works. Boy, this guy tells me to keep my front shoulder in and let my backside drive through. And wow, I'm starting to get extension through the ball. My power is really starting to come because I do it every day. So I'd go to that 30-minute lesson. And this is one thing that drives me crazy. All these kids are doing lessons nowadays, these camps, this lesson, all this stuff. And I tell my kids and anyone that'll listen, I say, listen, you don't get better at a camp. You don't get better at a lesson. You get better on the 4 hours a day you work on your craft for the next 6 days. That's where you get better. And that was the deal for me, man. Every day after school, my mom would drop me off until I could drive. And I would stay there for 4 or 5 hours and just hit in this batting cage and hit and hit and hit and hit. And sure enough, my goals kind of went, my dad was right. And my dad's message to me real quick was preparation meaning opportunity. Because I always said, I want to play college baseball, Dad. He goes, well, if you want to play college baseball, he goes, your opportunity probably will come along one day, but you better be prepared for it. It'd be a shame if you weren't. So the next year I started JV. The next year I started varsity my junior year. And he was right. I was getting exponentially better by hitting every day. By my senior year, I was one of the best players in the area. And it was just, you know, I was so grateful all the swings that I took and Frank Porco Tuesday nights. But the passion for hitting was, I really became obsessed with getting better. And the other part of this thing with my dad and I, as a father son, was my senior year, I what, this is the opportunity. I wanted to play college baseball, and I was so frustrated because I was like, man, I don't have one offer from anybody, not Division I, Division II, Division III. And I am one of the better hitters in the area now. But, you know, when I go to a tryout, Ben, you know, I go run the 60, you know, I didn't run that well. I'd get cut, and I'd be so frustrated because I'm like, is this a track tryout or are we doing baseball here? You know what I mean? And it was like so frustrating. So I go home to my dad. And I'm like, Dad, I don't know where the colleges are. No one's, you know, calling. No one's coming. I don't know what's going on. And he goes, I never forget. He said to me, he goes, Sean, he goes, you're right. He goes, remember this. No one is coming. No one's coming. He goes, he said, no one's coming for you, man. He goes, in a lesson in life, you better learn to play offense in your life and not defense and be waiting for everybody to come to you because they're not coming. You know, you can see at the tryouts, you're getting cut and this and that. He goes, why don't you go to them? Because my dad had just started a company, Casey Chemical at the time. And he would send out all these letters, like every month he would send out these flyers, these brochures. I knew because I licked all the envelopes, you know, every month. He was ridiculous. So he was like, why don't you do what I'm doing? He goes, listen, tomorrow after school, why don't you sit down and write 30 letters to the 30 colleges you want to go to, Division I through III. He goes, and let them know who you are. You know, and it's funny now with social media, you could send videos out. But back then, right, in 1992, you had to send letters. So I did. He goes, so I never forget. I come home from school, bam, bam. My dad meets me at the door. He brings me into his office, right? You know, his office was in our house. We sit down at the office and we start writing letters. Okay, who's your first letter? Hey, I got a University of Clemson. I'd love to go there. We'll write them a letter. I want to go to Penn State. Write them a letter. How about Marietta, Division III over here? Write them one. College of Worcester, Morehead State. Whoever would listen, I wrote these letters to. And I remember getting up. My dad was like, hey, write one more letter. He goes, University of Richmond sent you a brochure last year at the Keystone State Games. Write them a letter too. So last letter, bam, University of Richmond, thanks for the brochure. Send it out. Senior year comes.
That's where you went.
Yes, and that's where I went. Senior year comes, having a great season.
Wow.
Four games to go in the year, dude. I go 4-for-4 with 8 RBIs against this team named Montour. And I remember my coach saying to me, hey, Case, he goes, I was walking out to first base in the seventh. He goes, hey, how many hits you have? I go, 4 hits. How many ribbies? 8 ribbies, 4 doubles. He goes, that's incredible, man. He turned and looked to the left. He goes, you know why? He goes, you see that guy behind the backstop? I go, yeah. He goes, that's the University of Richmond coach. He drove 6 hours to come see you play on the count of the letter you wrote him 2 months ago. And sure enough, man, I went to University of Richmond. I ended up keeping the same motto of hit every day, hit every day, hit every day. My junior year, I won the NCAA batting title, hit .461. I was the number one hitter in Division I baseball and became a second round pick of the Cleveland Indians. Only reason I say all that stuff, man, is because only 7 years earlier was that conversation with my dad of, can you go talk to the coach and tell him I should be playing over this guy? And I do think about, had my dad decided to go talk to that coach, maybe we're probably not talking today because I've become probably a fringe high school player.
I got to tie something together here because it's really beautiful what you're articulating for all of us, backed up by all of this work. And here's what stands out to me. I know there are people listening who you're struggling or you're waiting, or you have fears and you have doubts. When I hear you talk about all the work you put in because you listened to your dad, all of that belief and passion that we feel from you comes from the work that you did. And so for those of you that are listening, if you're struggling in your ability to move forward, to take action, it's not happening fast enough for me, you had the aggressive patience to do what needed to be done every day. And then your dad was right. You got to create awareness to let people know who you are. Nobody's coming to bang down your door. You got to go knock down the door of opportunity. And that was more action that you had to take. A lot of people put in the work. Hey, look at me. You should come to me. You still created the awareness. It's incredible. Now, here's where I want you to take us, because I think this is an amazing part of your story. Now hearing the back part of the story, you hit .302 in the major leagues. Mm-hmm. Batting, I mean, if a player bats .300 one time in their career, that would be extraordinary. They'd say, gosh, like I was able to do something many guys, thousands upon thousands of guys that have played, they never did it. You bet your career batting average was 302. So for those individuals listening, you don't have to be in sports who are in the business world, or maybe there are athletes, and they're saying, gosh, like, will I ever get there to my highest level? Can you speak to them about how that 302 batting average is directly connected to Porco, the batting cage, listening to your father, and going and doing what you did at Richmond? It all ties together, but people don't want to wait, man.
Yeah, you know what? It's a day one thing. I always think I live my life day one, day one, day one. It's just a, you know, a bunch of day ones at the end of the day. And you know, I always talk about process. I look at a process of your life. It's a set of repeatable habits, right? Done daily when you focus on the task at hand and executed through consistency, discipline, and willpower. When I look back now, as I make that definition, when I look back now, that's what it was all about. It really was to get to where you want to go. It's really like, what are your habits you're forming daily? And are you willing to have consistency and discipline and willpower? The willpower meaning the days I don't want to show up to the cages, am I willing to listen to that voice and say, I hear you, I'm going to do it anyway. I hear you, I'm going to do it anyway. And there was many days I didn't want to hit, or many days I didn't want to put the work in, but that voice in my head said, don't do it. That was the reason on some of the days I did it. And when I look back at the career 302 average, I think to myself, it was the innate ability to have a process for an at bat every day. So if I as a hitter, I'll take you through my process. And I said, you know, process for your life, you know, what was my process before the game? And then my process during the game, during an at bat. I used to pull a note card out that Harvey Dorfman, who wrote The Mental Game of Baseball, used to tell me to do. He said, put three things on the card. So I said, okay. And he's like, and I don't want them to be mechanical. I just want them to be focused driven, right? So I want you to focus on the task at hand. So I pull out the note card on deck. See the ball, be easy, hammer it. Was on there. One, two, three. See the ball, be easy, hammer it. I put it back in my pocket. I take a couple practice swings, and then bam, I was up. And when I got up, I had another process. So my process for my at bat, just like it would be the process of your life, when we feel anxiety or we feel stress, what do? We breathe. We learn to breathe in through our nose, out through our nose, longer exhale than inhale because it brings our heart rate down, right? I understand more about that now than I did then, but I knew the breath was important because I knew that baseball created the anxiety for me. I didn't have to have something in my life happen. I got 50,000 people that are looking for me to perform, whether we're on the road or whether we're home. Hey, listen, they pay you money to get out there and perform. They don't pay you money to say, hey, you had a great showcase, man. You're fast and you hit home runs. They pay you to dominate in the game, right? So the process for me in the at-bat was, okay, I got to get my state under control, right, so that I can wait, right? So get my state right. So deep breath. Right back in the box, slow myself down, look middle away, react in. And I would say, hunt the fastball, look middle away, react in. Yes, 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 I'm swinging until my eyes tell me no, because I don't have time to look and see, you know, it's .4. It's .4 to say, is it a fastball? Is it a curveball? Is it a slider? Is it a split finger? Right? Is it a changeup? I have to be ready to go with my eyes, right? So what I would do was I would just repeat that process over and over and over, one pitch at a time. Unbelievable story, and you'll love this story, Ben, being from St. Louis. I'm at the All-Star Game 2004. I'm sitting in the, we're the best players in the world, dude. You know, Muhammad Ali just came in the clubhouse. George Bush just came in the clubhouse. They want to be in this clubhouse, right? And all these guys are there. I got Bonds to my right. I got Mike Piazza, Moises Alou, Jeff Bagwell, some of the best players in the game. I'm in the food room with Scott Rowland and Mike Piazza. We're sitting there before we go out to BP. And I say to Scott Rowland, because Pujols at the time was one of the best in the world, right? We were all-stars, and then Pujols and Bonds were at a different level, right? So I said to Rowland, I said, Scott, because he was third baseman with the Cardinals at the time. I said, what is it, man? What is it about this guy that's different than who we are in this room? All stars. He goes, Case, I never seen anything like it. He goes, this guy doesn't give away one pitch. Not one pitch to give away. He said, it could be Tuesday night in July. We could be losing 9-0 in Kansas City. This guy we'll put together a 12, 13, 14 pitch at bat and hit a single right field. Now, it doesn't seem like that big a deal, right? But over 162 it is. And this is the reason why. 18 years later from that conversation, 2004 at the All-Star game in Houston, 18 years later, in 2022, we watched Albert Pujols hit 700 home run. Only four players have ever done that. We watched him hit 2,000 RBIs. Incredible. 3,000 hits, right? And how did he do it? He did it one pitch at a time, and he was an absolute sniper. He was an absolute sniper. There was not one time he gave away a pitch. And when you can do that year in and year out, you end up being one of the greatest players of all time.
It's fascinating hearing you say this because, you know, we always hear people say how great they want to be, and you have a conversation with their action and you realize they really don't want it that bad. And so I love hearing stories like this because for the listeners, it highlights that's what it takes to be great. Right. And what you did is what it takes to be great. I want to transition, though, because I think this is so important. You know, hitting 302 and an average of 302 for a career. And many people don't realize many people say that in all of athletics, hitting a baseball against a major league pitcher is the hardest thing to do in all of sports because of what you just shared, the eye contact. There's 0.4 seconds. You're throwing different pitches. So because of the discipline, you were able to do that. You were able to create this great platform. Everybody now sees the personality while you're the mayor and people love you if they're not watching you on TV and all the things you're doing for broadcasting or watching your podcast, The Mayor's Office. You know, people now feel that energy. But I mentioned earlier what I find to be so incredible is you took the platform. You took your results. You didn't say, I'm going to just ride off into retirement and into the sunset. You decided to start and become part of the Miracle League of South Hills. You decided to help these special needs families, adults, children. Tell us about the importance of the Miracle League to you. And once again, we will share the video. I don't want you guys to miss the power of this video. But Sean, how much does the Miracle League mean to you? And how much does this off the field work mean to you and your legacy?
I think it's been probably the biggest thing in my life. You know, I think I was lucky. I was very blessed because, you know, to have the platform that I had being a Major League Baseball player allowed me to get into some companies to really raise some money. You know, it was one of those things. Although at the beginning, it wasn't easy. You know, special needs kids have always been in my heart. When I was in college, after I got drafted after my junior year, there was a school for kids with cerebral palsy in Richmond, Virginia. I used to volunteer there a couple of days a week, and I started to realize, wow, these kids are incredible. They're just stuck in their bodies, though. They're stuck in their bodies, but their minds are like exactly like you and me. It really opened up a world for me. And then, you know, as I saw a friend of mine in 2005 asked me to throw the first pitch out in Dayton, Ohio to a Miracle League field. I didn't even know they existed, but I remember thinking to myself, I'm going to build one of those when I'm done playing. And, you know, like I was saying before, to much is given, much is expected. And I knew that. And, you know, so when I first started to build the Miracle League field, it was just, you know, I wanted to give back and I wanted to have a place where kids with special needs could come play. And so sure enough, you know, we raised the first $1 million to build the field. Then we raised close to $1 million for this one of all-inclusive playground we built. And then we just built that next inning job training facility for our kids. It's been incredible, man. 350 kids, you know, whether they have cerebral palsy, Down syndrome, autism, whatever, it's really 350 families. You know what I mean? We have you should see our games, man. I always tell people, if you're having a tough day, if you're losing the mindset of gratitude or abundance in your life, come out to a Miracle League game. 30 minutes. And they're all over the country now. It's 300 some fields over the country. There should be way more than that. But, you know, go find a Miracle League field. Go sit down there for 30 minutes to an hour. The joy of these kids is phenomenal, man. When you announce, and we have an announcer announce the kid's name, they come out, get their hats going, that they're allowed to be part of a team. It's the 1 hour a week that the parents are allowed to sit in the stands and be a parent, because we have a buddy. We have 350 buddies too that volunteer to push Johnny's wheelchair or help, you know, Sue around the bases for a 6-week season. It's incredible. And we have another program that's starting on Saturday. A good friend of mine, John Dennis, owns a gym called Telio Fitness here in Pittsburgh. We bring the kids in. We train them. We call it Muscles for Miracles. I mean, Ben, we bring them in, bro. We have them ripping ropes. We have them doing sprints, pushing sleds. And we don't pull any punches. Let's go. We're ready to go. We're just like, these kids are just like any other kids. And the greatest thing is so many people around this area have rallied around this group of kids. And we have, you know, just it given them a lot of opportunities to be just like any other kid, to train, to be a part of a team, to put a uniform on, to sleep with your bat and your glove before the game starts. We started a travel program this summer. We got a bus and we traveled to Cincinnati. We traveled to New Jersey, Allentown. We played other Miracle League fields. I think we're the first team to ever do that. So it's incredible, man. The Miracle Leagues and our Miracle League of the South Hills, it is probably the greatest thing I've ever been a part of, man. And I'm very, very humbled by it more than anything.
I got to share this to wrap things up. The word that it keeps going through my mind, it's abundance.
Yeah.
You know, I think in life, everybody wants abundance. You want abundance in terms of health and happiness for your family. You want abundance in your career. You want abundance in what you can do to make an impact outside of your career. And when I hear your passion, all this passion and belief going all the way back to the first story you shared at 14 years old, it's created this abundance in your life. And here's what's unique. I hope everybody noticed this. The passion that you spoke of about hitting a baseball is the same passion. And maybe you were just more passionate talking about the Miracle League. And I think that's incredible. You know, we've all been blessed with capacity. I always say that everything you need is already in you. That first ever speech that I left on a voicemail for an NFL player, the first ever time to fire up a professional athlete. And I called Aeneas Williams, the Hall of Famer. And I said, Aeneas, like, what do I say to this kid? He says, just remind him that everything you need is already in you, but you better go take it. And Sean, I think that's the beauty of your story, is that there was somebody at 14, your father, and these coaches who helped you understand you got to take it. And you have, and it's now created your ability to continue to share that passion with the Miracle League. I can't wait to continue our relationship. I just think you're showing up with just a different fire and passion for life. And to have now raised $3.5 million for the Miracle League, you're going to do so much more off the field than you ever did on it, which is how Aeneas is. That you got, you were the two of you, a lot of reminders for me of the two of you together. So I can't thank you enough for coming on The Burn. This has been a very special episode, and I am going to pull some of that extra footage. We got to create some clips. That was special. But thank you so much for coming on The Burn.
Yeah, Ben, thank you so much, man. And I just want to, you know, finish it with exactly what you said. Everyone out there has everything they need sitting in the chair or standing up wherever they are. Like, start taking action on your life. That physiology drives psychology. Like, keep going. Get out and do things you need to do to be the best version of yourself. And I all I know is I found that in life. And I think it's incredible. So, Ben, I appreciate it, man. Looking forward to touching base after this. And best of luck to you, too, and the lives you're impacting on The Burn, brother.
Thank you, Sean. I appreciate you so much. And we're going to all the ways that you can stay connected, from the Mayor's Office podcast to learning about the Miracle League to everything about Sean. We will leave detailed notes in the caption. You're going to want to stay connected. And organizations are bringing Sean in for coaching and for speaking. I mean, it's just incredible what he's doing off the field. And that's what The Burn is all about. It's when you understand that burn and it then ignites the why and the purpose, you become so disciplined in your action. That's why we bring you these stories every single week of amazing people like Sean, so that you can recognize for you, it's a daily choice, just like he said, one pitch at a time. It's a daily choice for you, one day at a time. Connect to The Burn, let it ignite that why and that purpose, and then you choose to go be disciplined as you write your story and make impact in your life. We are in this fight together. Until next week, this has been The Burn.
This episode of the Burn Podcast is powered by BenNewmanCoaching.com. your number one source for increasing consistency in your life and building the mental toughness habits required to live the life of your dreams. From self-paced courses to live coaching with Ben and everything in between, head over to bennewmancoaching.com and join the thousands of members working to unlock their peak performance every day.